or something happens and you go, huh? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Well, a couple things happened last week. I'm sitting over there with Beck, and I look down and I am wearing my breakfast on my pants. And, you know, you could tell I had eggs and bacon. How many of you have ever been someplace, fellas, when you look and you're wearing your food? And so Beck is like, really? So then she does this classic mama thing. She licks her thumb and puts it on there, and the eggs disappear, and she says, mama spit. It's just so funny. Things happen in our lives, right, where you think, oh my goodness, this is embarrassing. And then it disappears. None of you even knew, unless you knew. This morning, we are taking a look at the wise men who are coming out of the East. And the East would be over there in Iran, Iraq, what would have been known as Persia or the Medes. It's over in that part of the world. It's due east, right? If we're Israel, it's due east. A couple other things that you... Isn't she cute standing behind this thing? So you have this, the song Noel, right? It says they saw a star in the east. No, they didn't. The star would have been in the west. So even in our Christmas carols, we can't seem to get the Christmas story right. And so part of our work is to help you all go, you know, the star was in the west. Jerusalem is west of Iran and Iraq and Persia. So here are these wise men looking west. Okay. So when you read the Gospel of Matthew, there's two main gospel stories that we have. Matthew is written primarily from Joseph's perspective. And Luke is written from Mary's perspective. And so you have those two stories. And then John goes a completely different route. The Gospel of John is just really wonderful that way. But it doesn't have nearly the historical facts that we're looking for. Anyway, so let's begin to take a peek at this story. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, just so you know, if you read the Old Testament, Bethlehem is also known as Ephrath. So, and that would have been the home of David. That's where David was a shepherd. But they didn't call it Bethlehem in his day. It would have been called Ephrath. And there are some translations that even have it Ephrath, wrath. So there's two of that. Again, some of the translations coming over into English aren't real clean. And you just have to kind of live with that. Anyway, so here we are.
Where are we at?
We are in Matthew 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem or Ephrath of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, this is the Herod. Next week we'll talk about the Herods. This is Herod the Great. He would be the son of Antipater. Anyway, coming from the east, they arrive in Jerusalem, and they say, where is he who was born king of the Jews? When you look in Matthew, the first chapter of Matthew is answering the question, who is Jesus? So from a Jewish perspective, they give the genealogies because people would want to know what's the family root. That's what they're looking for. And if it's a king, remember the king had to come from the tribe of David. That's where the king of Israel would come from. Chapter 2, now that the first question is answered of who is Jesus, the next question is where is Jesus? And so, listen to what they say. Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star, right, in the east. This is east, for those of you that don't carry a compass around in your head. No, that's east. So, he says, for we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard it, he was troubled, and all of Jerusalem with them. So notice these men, and there isn't three wise men. We're not told there's three wise men. We're told there's three gifts. There could have been 25 of them. But having looked around in that part of the world, there's no way three guys or three people would come across what is known as the Syrian desert. The Syrian desert is where there's a lot of bandits and thieves, and they prey on any strays that be wandering around in that desert. So there's no way they travel by themselves. This is a caravan of scholars, I think. And so they would have had camels, and we'll talk about camels in a second, but they're moving from over there, basically where Nineveh is, over to Jerusalem. And that's about, I'm guessing, at about 500, 550 miles. You're moving across a desert. So as crazy as this sounds, on a snowy day, I'd be welcome to have a little sun today. I don't know about you guys, but sun would feel pretty good. It's just that the sun over there is crazy hot. Their hottest day has been 135 degrees. Fairly hot.
Enough to make beef jerky outside.
Yeah, really. So you've got all this heat. They're in their winter, it goes a little bit like Florida, between 70 and 90. So that's the heat in this desert. Remember, for those of you that don't have a map in your head, Israel is a shoebox sitting on the Mediterranean, and all the way around it is a desert. So you have Damascus, that would be one of the oldest cities of the world, 10,000 years old. But from Damascus, and as you go all the way around it like a banana, is a desert. All of it. And what's crazy is they all have different names, but for those of you who drove here, there's a good chance your gasoline came from oil in that part of the world. They have the largest bank of oil still on the earth, but it's under that desert. So let's continue and hear what happens with these people coming out of the east. When Herod heard that the king, remember, they are going to Jerusalem thinking they're going to find the king of the Jews. Where would you go? Well, you'd go to the capital of Israel. And the capital is Jerusalem. Right? The city of the king. And it's been the city of the king since David. And so he goes there. He's not looking to talk to Herod. He's looking to hear that Herod had a son. Well, there's no son with Herod. As a matter of fact, next week you're going to find out Herod kills almost all of his sons. He wasn't. As a matter of fact, one of Caesar Augustus said, you'd rather be a dog than Herod's kids, because he kills them all. That's next week. And then it says, and gathering together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, they began, Herod with them, to inquire where the Christ was to be born. And they said, in Bethlehem of Judea. Now listen to this quote. It comes to us from Micah 5. And a large part of what they were tracking was Old Testament prophecies about this one. And it would say, and to you, Bethlehem, land of Judea, are by no means least among the leaders of Israel. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people. Herod, coming from the book called The History of the Jews, would die in 4 BC. It looks like, by the way people write of him, that he had a form of sexually transmitted diseases. It could very well have been gonorrhea. But very painful. So here is this man who is called Herod the Great. He would build all over Israel. Melinda was asking about Masada. Masada is not mentioned in the scriptures, but it's below, right? The Sea of the Dead Sea is where Masada is. He would build a place called the Herodion, which is where he would have as his resting place, the kind of his monument, huge structure that his body was laid in when he died. And then there would be another one over by the Jordan River. And it starts with an M, it's like Macherius. I didn't pronounce that right. But it is where he had John the Baptist beheaded. So he was a great builder of things. And there's a very good chance he's the one that would start the building of the city Sepphoris, which would be where I believe Jesus and Jesus' dad worked. It was about 4 miles from Nazareth. But Herod the Great, he is known or called great because of all the buildings that he did. Anyway, let's first begin to realize this journey. We're going from over there in Persia. It would probably be between Iran and Iraq, is if you're keeping track of, like, Kuwait, where Melinda's, one of her relatives is going. It's in that part of the world, and it's 500 miles, but what you may not understand is it's the desert. How many of you have ever walked in a desert? Crazy, isn't it? Just amazing how hot it is. And it would get up probably into the hundreds. The only way to travel is this one particular animal called a camel. And the camels at that point in the world were called the ships of the desert. They were 10 feet long. They were 6.5 feet high. There's three kinds, or at least in the known world, there were three kinds. The first one would be called the dromedary, which has one hump. And you can tell, because I didn't know this stuff, I thought the hump was where they kept the water. No, that's the fact. Then there would be a two-hump camel. And it was domesticated. The first two were domesticated. So they would be in this part of the world, and there would be camels moving, carrying people. One camel, as crazy as it sounds, can carry 400 pounds. Just amazing how much weight they can carry. Here are some other facts. This is how I spent my week. I thought this, it's interesting for me. It may not be for you, but it was interesting for me. Camels can live up to 50 years. Isn't that amazing? And so they became one of the main animals in a family. Like, I've had a number of dogs in my house, but none of them live 50 years. Anyway, they can travel up to 100 miles or 15 days without drinking water. Imagine that. 100 miles. 15 days. They have really thick lips, which allow them to eat really thorny bushes that grow in the desert. No other animal can eat those bushes or shrubs, but they can because of their mouth is really thick. Their lips are really thick. They can shut their eyelids because of the thick eyebrows in a sandstorm. How many of you walked yesterday? Did you guys have kind of a whiteout up here? We walked yesterday, and I wanted to see what it was looking like, and I would get snow in my eyes, and then I couldn't see very well. Camels have very thick eyebrows around their eye, and they can squint, and it would be like a shield in front of their eyes so that they can move in a sandstorm and still be fine. The other one that is really fascinating is they have a really thick pad of leather, just like a leather belt. If you're wearing a leather belt, that's a little bit like what the undercarriage of a camel is like. Their bellies are real thick, like this belt that I have here. And they would have that there and on their knees so that they could actually sit on the sand when it's 120 degrees out, and it won't burn them. That's the reason why they can do that. They aren't like other animals. Their feet are hooves, so it's really more of a cloven hoof, so it doesn't burn their feet. So they are unique, enabling them to function in the desert. And here's the craziest thing. They can drink, and I had to track this down a couple times, they can drink 25 gallons of water in 5 to 10 minutes.
Wow.
Just amazing. They're like the biggest Electrolux or Hoover sweeper you've ever thought of. And it's just amazing how much they can consume. And they don't sweat much. So they were designed to be able to travel in a desert. And I believe these particular men, or magi they were called, came across in a caravan in that desert for 500 miles on camels, because that was the Uber of the day. That's how everybody got around. Okay, so we go from there, and now, how did those particular men know that there would be this child born? And I have three sources for you, but the first that I'd want you to hear is that I believe that when Daniel was alive, 500 years earlier, he was in that part of Persia, right? And Daniel would have been an interpreter of dreams. And so they heard a number of his passages. Let's run to them so we can kind of at least hear it. This is coming to us out of Daniel 7, and it says, this is Daniel speaking, I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat, and his vesture was white like snow, and his hair was like wool, his throne ablaze with flames, its wheels were burning fire, and the river of fire flowing out, coming out from below him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him. Then it jumps down into 13. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, the clouds of heaven, like one coming, the Son of Man. So for those of you who have wondered where some of Jesus' titles come from, the Son of Man comes from that passage. Right there, that is Daniel 7, that is verse 13. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given, this would be from the Ancient of Days to this Son, to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. It's interesting, and it says, which will never pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So this is part of the prophetic sense that I believe the wise men were reading, even though they weren't Jewish. They were looking over the shoulder of this one who 500 years ago lived in their midst. Right? He was one of the refugees that came out of Israel. And he was stuck over there. And he became one that would interpret dreams for Nebuchadnezzar. Anyway, so we jump from there. But here is, not only were people in Persia looking for a king, here are some other ones that you can track down. One would be, his name is Suetonius. He would be a Roman historian. And he would write this. There had been spread all over the Orient an old and established belief that it was fated that at that time for men coming from Judea, one who would come and rule the world. And this is a Roman historian just saying this is what people were believing. Here's another one. This is from Tacitus. He says, this would be a firm persuasion that at this very time in the East, there would grow a powerful ruler coming from Judea. It's interesting that when they write Judea, there's two A's in there. So for those who keep track of etymologies, it's interesting how they would write it. And that one would acquire a universal empire. These weren't believers. These weren't even Jews. These are just people who are believing something is happening. Something is going on. Then here's another one. This would be Josephus, who would be a Roman Jewish historian. And he would say, the Jews at this time believed one from their country would become the governor of the inhabitable earth. All of those I've put down in there so you can go track those down if you want to read them for yourself. So it wouldn't be unusual for the Magi to fall in line with the expectations of the people who were living in that day, that there would come a ruler from Israel. All right, so now let's think about this star. Let's read what it says about this star business. And then Herod secretly called the Magi, ascertained for them the time the star appeared. So there's this star that when we sing, we all pop in and hear these songs about stars. The Magi in that part of the world were known for interpreting dreams, and that's what Daniel did. But they were also people who followed stars in the sky. Do I have any astronomer type folks in the room? Anybody that stays up at night, drinks coffee, looks at the stars? My dad was one of those. Of course, I went to sleep early, so I never went outside, and he'd point out, did you see the Big Dipper? And I'd say, no, but I'm sure it's there. But here is how the church over 2,000 years have thought about this star. The first one would be Halley's Comet, which has occurred a number of times. It moves around our galaxy, so to speak, came through in 11 BC. So it could be a comet. The second one, there was a conjunction of two planets, of both Saturn and Jupiter in 7 BC. Jesus, it looks like, when you do the math, was born somewhere between 7 BC and 4 BC, because we know Herod would come and kill all the babies, and that would have been his last edict in 4 BC. So it had to happen before that. Okay, so here's this last one. Johannes Kepler puts forth this idea that it was a star explosion, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. And he would say it would be like a nova. And there is written records that over in China, they saw something like that between 5 and 4 BC. So you have your options as far as which one you want to track and which one you kind of want to study. I tip towards the nova that come. I just think that's kind of interesting. And it would have been present in the sky for about 3 months. So the last one that I would have for you to think about is Egypt too was looking at stars. And they had a star called Mizori, and it would be the star of a prince. Now, it doesn't say that they were tracking a star at that point. What it does say is that they studied the stars, and people believed that you could tell the future by looking at the stars. And now we call that
astronomy.
Astronomy is the study of the stars. Astrology is using the stars to tell your own future. So you have a little bit of a confluence. You know, that's where all of that gets mishmashed together. And that's where all of that comes from. Okay, so where did the whole idea of the star come from? Well, I knew you'd ask that, so I had to track it down. And for somebody who has their Bible and you're open, turn over for me, if you could, Numbers 24, and let's hear 15 and 7. Numbers, that would be over there in the book of the law, right? Genesis, Exodus. Got Numbers right over there. Numbers 27. Somebody read that for us. Raise your hand when you get there. It's kind of like game show stuff, you know? Who gets there?
Chapter 27.
Yeah, chapter 27. Or chapter 24, 15 through 7. Chapter 24, 15 through 7. Yeah. Go ahead. Chapter 24, 15 through 17.
Chapter 24, 15 says, and he took up his parable and said, Balaam, the son of Beor, hath said, the man whose eyes are open hath said, he hath said, which heard the words of God and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of the Almighty falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob and scepter, which shall rise out of Israel and shall smite the corners of Moab and destroy all of the children of Seth.
So for those of you who are wondering if there's an Old Testament root for this thing for the star, it comes from that passage in Numbers, and it's the story of Balak. Sounds like something out of a Star Wars movie, doesn't it? So here's Balak, who is the king of Moab, and this would be in the time of Moses coming out of Egypt, moving through that desert, and people in and around Israel and Moabs or Moabites would have been in that window. That king is starting to get nervous about this people called Hebrews. And if you want to know the root of the word Hebrew, it is pronounced A-brew. The H and E drop it to an A, and it means wanderer. That's who they were. They were wanderers. And so the king is nervous about them, and so he hires this seer whose name is Balaam. And Balaam in the scriptures is known for a talking ass. That's who he's known for. Can't believe we get to say that in church, right? So here we have this king who wants Balaam to curse the Jews. And he says, I can only do what the Lord gives me to do. And he's not a believer, but he has this sense that I need to say what I've been told. And what he says blesses Israel. And the king of Moab gets upset with him and he says, I can only tell you what God says. I can't make you happy if it isn't what the Lord is telling me to say. Interesting, isn't it? If you're going to be a prophet, understand, most people won't like you because you're going to say some hard things. Anyway, the thing that he says is that out of the east, a star will come and it will speak of the coming one. And so this thing of Israel having a king that would come out of Judea or Bethlehem, Ephrath, that's the root of this. Now, we go from we have talked about the wise men coming out on camels. Then we talked about all the prophetic utterances, both of the scriptures and in the historical record. We go from there, and now they are now moving from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And here's another one of those myth busters. Even on our piano, we have the wise men who it looks like are in a stable, don't they? Isn't that what that looks like? But if you read that passage closely, you find out that Mary and Joseph are in a house. They're not in a manger. They're in a house. Hence, Joseph isn't poor. He has a house. Isn't that crazy? All of the things we built into the Christmas story, and some are true, but some aren't. And I would recommend for you, when you are reading the scriptures, be very attentive to the details. All right, so we go from there. And these guys bring three gifts. Do you know what they are? Frankincense. Frankincense is a resin. Just like, you know, locally here, we will tap into maple syrup in the spring here. I love maple syrup. But resin is that sap that comes out. Well, that's where that sap comes from. And the tree is from that part of the world, and they use frankincense on the Temple Mount. That was the incense you would smell as you walked up to the Temple Mount. You would smell this sweet smelling burning, and that was frankincense. Okay, so then we go to myrrh. Myrrh also is a resin. It is from the city called Smyrna. And of course, if you hear it in your head, you can hear the Myrna in it. It's because that comes from that city. The resin was from the trees in and around that part of the world. And that would be where the early church Polycarp would be a bishop from. And that myrrh is what they would use for embalming. It was also used medicinally or something like a salve. And it was also used at a wedding. But primarily, it was used as an embalming process. And you know that when Jesus died, a fellow by the name of Nicodemus, who I love to call Nick at night, because every time you see him, he's at night. But here he is, and he's carrying about 100 pounds of aloes and myrrh. It's an embalming kind of stuff. Okay, so then we get to the last one, and it is? Gold. So in Persia, whenever you showed up in front of the king, you had to give a gift. And the gift the Persian gifts, the gift the Persian kings wanted was gold. So here are these three gifts that come to this infant, Jesus. Now, let's do one more thing with you, and then I'm going to let you go. You might say, what can we bring? The King of Kings. What can we bring like the wise men? What can we bring? And the first thing, and this is a somber thought, and you may or may not, this may not go over easily for you, but I'm going to go with this anyhow. The first thing would be myrrh. I would have all of us, if you're a believer, give the day of your death as a gift to God above. Don't be afraid of death. Give it to the Lord and say, the Lord, this is yours. Do with me in your timing. But don't be afraid of it. Don't run from it. Don't be afraid not to talk about it. God has had you in the palm of his hands all your life. Give that day unto him. And the crazy thing is, today, we're afraid of death. People rarely talk about death. But you go back 100, you go back, well, not 100, you go back probably to Charles Wesley and before that, they would pray for a good death. I have never prayed for a good death in my life. But now as I think about myrrh, I'm beginning to wonder. I need to grow up and realize that that's part of God's plan for me. The second would be frankincense. And it's the sense of, when you have the chance, give him worship. And it could be with music. It could be just with your prayers and you say thank you. But give God what is his due, his glory. And for some of you, you have done that a large part of your lives. Others of you, it's really new. But just allow yourself to, you know, lift up your hands if you want to. The great thing about lifting up your hands is that we're a Quaker church. You can do that. And that's okay. Now here comes gold. Here's this last one. The gold was supposed to be the most precious thing in your life. But you know what? It's not. The most precious thing in your life is your life. Give your life to God above. That's your worship. The day of your passing, the frankincense for worship, and give your life to Christ, who will then enable you to do some things that today maybe you've never dreamed of before. Now, I'm going to say one more thing, and then we'll sing a song. People ask me, you know, Bill, what's your hope for Bethany? I'm going to give you my three things that I really believe in. The first is that you should be able to have joy as you move through life together. That should be a hallmark of our lives. And that we really do believe God's going to do great things, and we get to be a part of it. So joy is a big one. The second is you can be assured of your faith. We don't have all the answers, but we know Jesus does. We believe in Jesus. So there's an affirmation and an assurance that your faith is spot on. And here comes this last one. My hope is that we get home to our heavenly home, and we get to meet all the saints who've gone before us. And we all have people who've gone ahead of us. And I'm looking forward to catching up with my mom and dad. I'm looking forward to being with some saints. You'll find me in the Oreo cookie line. But I'm hoping that the practice that we do together here gives us an inkling of what it's going to be like when we get to be with the cloud of saints coming out of Hebrews 12, the witnesses that have gone before us. So that's my hope for all of you. You'll have joy, you'll have an assurance of your salvation, and you're getting ready to go to your eternal home. Now, we get to be together until that day, but we will all go, because someday Jesus will say, "Come on home." Let's sing this last song.